This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's June 8th, 2020. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Stort, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live right here, right now, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. We are recording our shows on Mondays now using Facebook Live and then playing them at our normal times on Wednesday at WHUS 91.7 FM or WHUS.org. We will continue to do this until we are allowed back in the studio on the UConn campus. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, and now on Spotify. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Ron's Rant of the Week. The COVID-19 opening of the gate. This is it. We've opened the gate. It's now a little safer to be out and to be about when we're dealing with the COVID crisis here. Our numbers in Connecticut are down, which is good. That's definitely a positive. And it has been decided that some more businesses can open, which is good, because there are some businesses that really needed to open. So that's cool. Chris wants to know if he can purchase a sweatshirt. This is a cool sweatshirt, isn't it? Isn't that nice? I might have some extras from maybe a couple years ago. What size are you, Chris? Let me know. Anyway, back to the rant. So the cars and trucks with attitudes are back on the road. So we had this crisis. Everybody's locked in, locked down, locked whatever. Fran hates that. She said it feels like we're in jail. Anyway, and now we have open the floodgates a little bit, and the cars and trucks are back on the roads, and the roads are a little more populated with more vehicles and more large vehicles, more vehicles in general, and seems like the ones that were hiding for so long, morning Pete, the ones that were hiding for so long are now out, and they seem to be the ones that don't like cyclists as much. So, you know, I just happened to notice it. Fran and I went for this awesome ride yesterday. We rode up into up to Stafford Springs and back down. It was great. We did the classic Ron ride where you ride into the headwind so that you're doing all the work on the way out. And then when you turn around and come back, you get an extended false sense of fitness, which is always lovely. I love a tailwind in my back. It's a beautiful thing. So anyway, we had this great ride, but I did notice that there were a few people that were a little more impatient about our being on the roads than we have had in the past. And we sort of had almost like a 2 or 3 month vacation from those folks, but they're out and they're back. And so I want you all to just be careful. It's amazing how quickly people forget. Thing on my rant of the week, U.S. police batter Black Lives Matter protesters with bicycles. Yes, with bicycles. They use their bicycles as a weapon. We're going to talk about this a little later on in the show because this is a pretty strong matter and I think it needs some attention. And there are those that are giving it attention and we should probably hear about that. But anyway, yeah, they were actually weaponizing their bicycles and they were pushing them and throwing them into protesters to keep control of the protesters. Sad. There's a good note to this. We'll get to it. On a positive side, Black Lives Matter. Okay, so Black Lives Matter is all over the place right now. First it was COVID, now it's Black Lives Matter. We've got all sorts of issues here in the U.S. This is what we're dealing with. With it all over the world, but right now this Black Lives Matter is a big deal in this country. On a positive side, the politics of bicycles and Black Lives, it was a powerful symbol of unity. In Seattle, okay, there was a big protest that was going on, and a bunch of people on bicycles got together and they did something. It's called mirroring, creating lines of bikes that mirror the police lines and create a buffer zone. We are trying to help create a safe space for the people we are supporting, people of color and indigenous people, so they can make their demands and speak their minds, said Josh White, who sat on his bike in Seattle's Cal Anderson Park Thursday afternoon with two friends also on bikes. We are here to support and amplify their voices. A line of Black Lives Matter protesters stood with their bicycles blocking the street, fists raised, using their bikes to shield marchers from police. More details will be later in the show. That is a positive thing. That's a cool thing. So we're doing something cool with bikes. That's great. Okay, moving on to the maintenance minute. That's my next thing here on my list. This one came to me yesterday as we were riding our bikes because, you know, I get some of my best thoughts when I'm out riding with my buddy Fran over here. You know, she's like, hey. she inspires me to come up with ideas. And one of the ideas that we came up with was we rode up to Stafford Springs. We went to our favorite coffee shop in Stafford Springs, which was open, by the way, but it required a call in, wait forever, then they'll bring it out to the door.
Probably not wait forever.
It probably wasn't wait forever, but it's, you know, you got a delay there. You got a little bit of a delay. So anyway, we got there and it was like, well, what do? We can't go in, can't use the bathroom, can't, you know, do these things. So what do? Well, you basically decide to roll on. And the rest stop dilemma on a long ride. Why is my favorite cafe still closed? Jersey Pockets. And why? Why do you need a cycling jersey? But I need a bathroom. Alternatives. Your best suggestions are suggestions. We're going to go over this on the maintenance minute. First of all, let's go to that bicycle jersey. There's the, let's see here if I can pull this guy up. So anyway, we got the Average Joe Cyclist. I love this. This is his web blog. It's very cool. Joe Goodwill, an average cyclist. He writes a blog for people like me, people who love cycling but will probably never win any races, who don't necessarily look good in Lycra. He also writes the Electric Bike blog and the Average Joe's RV Living blog. So anyway, Joe says, do you really need a cycling jersey? Good cycling jerseys vary in price from around $40 to $140 and even more. You may be wondering, why would I spend that kind of money if I already have plenty of good shirts? Well, you could cycle in a $10 t-shirt. And in fact, he did that all the time when he was a boy. But there's technical features that might make it more comfortable while you ride your bike. Now, if you want to address here of someone who is an avid jersey owner, we have Pedal and Fran right next to me here, and boy, does she own a lot of jerseys. You own a lot of jerseys, Fran. You really do. But anyway. The jersey is special. The jersey is made out of a material that wicks moisture off your body, so that's a cool thing. The jersey is made to fit you and your physique correctly. There are different types of jerseys. There are club ride jerseys. There are loose fits, casuals. There are race fits. And it really kind of depends on how you wish to wrap yourself into your jersey. I prefer the club to race fit myself because I am small enough that if I wear anything any bigger, then things just flop around too much when I'm wearing it. So I like the closer fit race fit jersey because of that. Not everyone can wear one of those, and you become known as a mammal if you're not careful out there. And you know what the mammals are. The mammals are the middle-aged men in Lycra. So if you look good in it and you're sporting it and you're making it happen, then great. That's wonderful. I'll give you my reasons why I like a tighter fitting jersey here in a second. But anyway, we talk about, so how do you pack your jersey, pockets, and saddlebag like a pro? Well, the saddlebag's pretty easy. You got your spare tube, you got your tire levers, you got your CO2 or maybe your mini pump or whatever it is that you can squeeze in there. You got your 10 bucks because you might stop at a cafe that actually will be open, so you want to spend your money. You know, you got all this kind of stuff going on in there. Maybe your ID is in there. Some people put their IDs in the saddlebag. Some of them wear them on their wrist, like this one right here. Hello, over here. Got to get this movement thing down. Some of them wear them like this, like a road ID. And so you definitely want to have a road ID of some sort with you. If you have a problem, you need to be able to talk to the people or address to the people that are concerned about you. So they'll take care of you. They'll know that maybe you had to take the bus to a local hospital or whatever. So it's very, very important. But that's something else you want to carry with you. But that really doesn't address the whole jersey thing. Let's go back to the jersey thing. Are you right-handed or are you left-handed? Whatever you are, right or left-handed, you need to decide which is your prominent side, and that side will have the things that you need more importantly than other things. More importantly, what defines more importantly? Food. Food is more important. I need to be able to pack my pockets with food. I go for a 50-mile ride. I can put plenty of food in my pockets to get me where I gotta go. I've got a couple of water bottles on my bike. I've got one that has an energy drink in it to supplement the amount of sweat that I'm doing. I've got another one just with plain water. So I got enough water to carry me until I need more water. If it's a really hot day, I'm gonna have to find a place to stop and get water. There still are convenience stores open that you can walk into and buy a bottle of water. So you're not totally stranded as far as that goes.
But the bathroom thing's definitely a problem.
But the bathroom thing is a problem. Jersey's first, bathroom's next.
All right.
Okay. So anyway, the basically, I can carry enough food. If you take a look at your energy bars, your gels, your cookies, whatever it is you bring with you, a banana, whatever. If you take a look at all those things and you just add up the calories on it, you can get a pretty good idea of what you're going to need while you're riding your bike, because you have a rough idea about how many calories you're burning per mile, roughly 40 per mile. And you can have enough to replenish that if you need to. So that's how I can get around the whole, my cafe is closed, and what do I do now? Also, the other thing that I highly recommend is your energy drinks often come in, you can get a powdered version, you can get them in a small pack, and that will fit very nicely in your pocket, really easy to access. The center pocket on your bike, as you're packing your jersey like a pro, that's going to carry things like, if you're having like weather crisis times, like it's, you know, it's kind of warm out, but it's not quite warm enough out, I need my arm warmers, I need my knee warmers, I might need a light jacket, whatever it is. Things that are bulky and possibly heavy will go into your center pocket, because you want it centered on the back of your bike. And then on the opposite side, you can, you still have room for, maybe you want to just, maybe you want to stick your cell phone over there or whatever it is that you're carrying with you. There's maybe room for more food if you're on a really long ride. You can actually put some more food in there, and then at a point where you stop, you can exchange from one side to the other side. So that would be a thing that you can do with the other side pocket, or you know, anything else that you feel that you need while you're riding your bike. Food is my number one. I need food. I have to keep eating while I'm riding. I have to keep drinking while I'm riding. Fran reminded me as we turned up Marsh Road yesterday that her training coach Tracy had told her to remember, you should be drinking
you should be sipping off your bottle after 5 miles.
After 5 miles. And when she went to do that, she realized that there was no bottle there because she left her bottles at home. So anyway, I brought two. I gave her one of mine. That's why you ride with somebody else. You know, you can share. We've done this before. I've done this on group rides where, you know, someone forgets their bottles and everybody takes a turn giving up their spare bottle or whatever it is. And we always get someone home. Or we just dump some of our water into a bottle that will work for them if they're running low. But anyway, that's what you do. Maybe you come back from the ride with only one sock. I'm lost. That's all right. You'll fill me in. Now we run into the other problem. Now we've been sipping on the water bottles and we get to a point where we need to, what do you call it, Fran?
What?
What do you call it when you call it something? You call it, When you have to use the bathroom, that you not top it off, but you zero out is,
yeah,
what Fran calls it, zeroing out. So you need to zero out, because otherwise the bumps get a little bumpier on the ride and you start to feel that and you really need to use the bathroom. So what are you going to do? Well, my explanation there is look around and see if there is a small park in the area, a ball field or a, you know, just a little walking park in town. We found one right around the corner. There's a nice little park in Stafford Springs. We went back there, rolled back. It was a brand new, hardly been used porta potty sitting in there. One of the things that you carry also in your back pocket, by the way, right now, is you're also carrying your hand sanitizer with you. So when you use that porta potty, you get to, you know, wipe your hands down afterwards and get back on your bike and go. But anyway, so we found a nice porta potty. If you can't find that and you are not as modest as others are, you can always find a spot along the side of the road back into the woods, and if you live in that type of environment. And we have so many bathrooms out here in the woods that it's really not a huge issue because we're very rural. I know there are other places that aren't. If this doesn't disturb you in any way, I have one last suggestion as far as that goes. If you find a graveyard and you go far enough back in the graveyard, you can usually find a quiet spot. And I know that some people find that to be disrespectful. I am not doing it on anyone's grave. I'm just using it as a blockage, and you can get near the fence and you can at least have some sort of a block so no one can see you. That's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to do anything to those who are resting in peace. Anyway, I know it sometimes is a subject of concern, but it's very quiet. No one will bother you there, and it's really beautiful. So that would be another suggestion along the way. So that covers the two items that we need to deal with here on the Maintenance Minute, because that's always open with suggestions and different things too. And we now know what to do with when we're out on that long ride and our favorite cafe is closed. So there it is. Let's see here. Let's go here to the next thing on my list and we get into our show. Okay, so back to bicycles and political actions. Bikes on the front line. Bicycles have all of a sudden become like a thing in all these political presentations that we're having right now. In Bicycle Retailer, it's front news right now. There's a lot of things that are front news in Bicycle Retailer right now, and there's just a lot of things going on that are of concern. So in Seattle, I talked about this earlier, and elsewhere, cyclists are helping support participants, creating safe spaces. And that was, I think I actually pulled the direct article from the Cascade Bicycle Club. And it's the Cascade Bicycle Woo-hoo. Club, a powerful symbol of unity. A line of Black Lives Matter protesters stood with their bicycles blocking the streets, fists raised, using their bikes to shield marchers from police. And this is, this is cascade.org, and it's on their blog page, Seattle.
Oh, okay.
This is in Seattle. Right. They call it mirroring, creating lines of bicycles to mirror the police lines and create a buffer zone. And then I spoke earlier about them trying to help create a safe space. Bicycles are on the front line of protests and have roiled cities across the United States in response to police brutality and the killing of George Floyd. Breonna Taylor and other Black Americans in addition to allow protesters and their supporters to quickly get around the city and block streets, bikes are being used to direct and protect large crowds numbering in the thousands. Bikes have been truly useful in directing crowds and managing traffic in front and behind of groups of marchers, said Jackson Helm, who sat on his bike. That's Jackson Hearn. Can't quite read that, who sat on his bicycle alongside White in Cal Anderson Park. Bicycles are the first and last thing on all of the parades. We ride ahead and clear the intersections ahead of marchers and protect the rear. Sometimes groups of a few hundred people will break off to march in a different direction. We will accompany them. Supporters of the protests have taken on many roles. Some provide food, water, and coffee. Others provide medical assistance. For us on bikes, we are taking on the role of protecting the processions, Hearn said. He estimates that about 200 people with bikes have participated the night before. So they communicate by text, thread, and voice, shouting above the noise. We shout, bicycles to the front, bicycles to the back. On one occasion, a car broke through the line and was proceeding towards the marchers. We were able to use our bicycles to divert the car to a side street where the person was immediately arrested. There we go. It says here, he pedaled his bike to the side street adjacent to Cal Anderson Park, where a bicycle mechanic who asked to be identified only as Bicycle Guy had set up a mobile repair shop. Bicycle Guy had placed two repair stands on the side of the road beside his toolbox, boxes of tubes and tires, and a cardboard sign on the roof of his car offering free repairs. This is like almost brings tears to your eyes. This is a beautiful thing. I just wanted to play a supporting role here, Bicycle Guy said. Pretty much everyone riding a bicycle. Seattle needs some type of maintenance. Regardless of how many people are using their bikes as part of the protest, they can certainly use an adjustment to make their bikes safer. So this is really cool. There's a great picture here of Bicycle Guy, who he wants to be called, and he's got himself all set up to help people out. So for those of us who believe in bicycles that have the power to transform lives and communities, their use for peaceful protests is inspiring. Unfortunately, news reports also filled with images of police using bicycles offensively against protesters, holding them in the air to push forward crowds. These opposing uses are a reminder that bicycles are just tools, inanimate objects that can be used to build and unite or to smash and divide. What matters most is the heart and mind of the person using the bike. So anyway, I just thought that was a really cool thing. I really wanted to share it because there's more. There's totally more. Why am I bringing this up? I'll tell you why I'm bringing it up. Because this is from Forbes magazine. This was the 2nd of June. U.S. police batter Black Lives Matter protesters with bicycles. And there's a picture on Forbes' website of policemen holding their bikes up and basically wheels and chain rings exposed and pushing forward in a line. Really, really sad to see. Sad enough so that there's a lot of comments about it. And so this is why I brought this up, because there are comments from Trek Bicycles on this. There are comments from Fuji Bicycle on this. Both of those are major suppliers to bicycle law enforcement. So there's a few things that we're going to bring up here. One thing, just so you know, is I have to just comment here. John Burke from Trek Bicycles did an op-ed on June 2nd, and it was "When Justice Is Not Enough: The Growing Gap and What Can Be Done About It." He wrote this great op-ed about, you know, the ramifications of the unspeakable tragedy of George Floyd's murder should extend far and wide throughout the country. Floyd's death represents the worst of what has become far too common in our society: police brutality and racism. I hope that justice will be done, but the question I find myself asking is justice enough? So he goes on, he talks about this, very supportive of the whole situation, too often in our country, we look at the crisis through the lens clouded with emotion, and it causes us to ignore the facts. So anyway, he runs down and talks a lot about the problem that we have in the U.S. According to the Census Bureau, near 12% of Americans currently live in poverty. Most distressing are the 13 million kids across America living in low-income households. Half of those families are trying to make ends meet, and income that's below 50% of the poverty line. So if you want to reduce racism in America, the answer is not to send white politicians to funerals of Black people. It is to come up with a simple, bold plan to provide equal opportunity for all. A chapter of his recent book is dedicated to this very subject. So the suggestions are: political leaders in Washington seem to be creatively bankrupt when it comes to solving big problems like increasing opportunities for all. I would propose that we set the following national economic objectives to be achieved by the year 2030. And I'll explain why I'm using John Burke as this example here in just a minute, because there's another side to the story. So we're going to increase the share of income for the bottom 50% of the wage earners this country by from the current 12% pre-tax income to 20%. Cut the wealth gap between white households and black households in half, from 10 to 1 to 5 to 1. And number three here, give every kid in America a chance to succeed by reducing childhood poverty by 50%. In order to accomplish that, he has some suggestions. One, increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Now the current federal minimum wage at $7.25. Really, the federal wage is $7.25. Ouch. Doesn't cut it. We live in a bubble over here. The wage ends... This wage adds up to $15,000 a year. A family cannot pay rent, feed themselves, buy clothing to survive. By raising the federal minimum to $15 an hour, the most in need would have more secure footing for the first rung of the economic ladder and would become less dependent on government programs. Number two, every kid has a chance program. There are 13 million American children who live in poverty. For those kids whose families are below 50% of the poverty line, the government should offer a simple program. Number one, three basic meals a day until age 22, free basic Medicare until age 22, free education until age 22. This program would give the poorest children in our society a chance to live. And it would create productive taxpaying citizens for the future. It would also give kids at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, along with families, hope for the future. Third on his list is have the U.S. Department of Education take over the very poorest performing public schools in the country. Chief Justice Earl Warren wrote in the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education ruling, "It is doubtful that any child may reasonably be expected to succeed in life if he is denied the opportunity of an education, such an opportunity where the state has undertaken to provide it. It is a right which must be made to all at an equal level." So anyway, he goes on and on. He talks all about this wonderful stuff. John Burke has worn a lot of hats at Trek Bicycle since the first job packing parts when he was in high school. He's been the president of the company since 1997. He's the author of two books, 12 Simple Solutions to Save America and One Last Great Thing, a memoir about his father, the founder of Trek. He and his wife, Tanya, the CEO of Trek Travel, live in Madison, Wisconsin. So yay, John. Good stuff, right? Good stuff. So he's taking a lot of heat right now, a whole bunch of heat, because they're the police are using Trek bicycles for weapons to control crowds. And they're not using them the way that the people who are supporting Black Lives Matter are, by just making these buffers. They're using them as weapons to push and, you know, take sharp chain rings and push them into people's faces. Bad idea. Not a good thing. Bicycles, bicycle faces, are people's faces, chain rings. They should probably never meet. It's not a good thing. So he put "We Need Big Changes" on a Twitter tweet. I guess they call it a tweet. People have replied, "Here's a start for y'all. Stop supplying bicycles to police. There have been multiple occasions where the police have been terrorizing protesters with their Treks. I'm ashamed to ride a Trek and will no longer be supporting the brand until y'all change." Okay. This happened this evening in Midtown. This is another tweet that came in. 100% peaceful all day, and a line of 50 NYPD in full body armor rose directly into the people at the rear of the march. Trek has failed the cycling community. On and on and on. Stop selling bikes to cops. It goes on and on and on. Now, John Burke, in his defense, and I will say, you know, there is a defense here, he said he will address this today, and it is June 8th. So next week on Bicycle Talk, I will have some more information for you about how John Burke has decided to deal with this. So there's just a lot of things going on. Fuji Bicycles, they're gonna win the gold star on this one, and I will get to them in a moment. But here's another one, this from June 4th and from Streets Blog NYC. It's not your bike anymore. Police swipe bikes at Black Lives Matter march. The police are actually aggressively swiping protesters and reporters' bikes during peaceful protests. A misuse of power by law enforcement that's historically been used to stop people from exercising their right to protest, according to a civil rights attorney and the victims of harassment. Cops seem to see the bikes as an obstacle to what we were doing, said Armin Rosen, a reporter with the Tablet, who had his bike taken by police even though he wasn't arrested. They really wanted to get the bikes off the street for whatever reason. I'll tell you whatever reason. Seattle got together and made a barrier to keep the cops away from the protesters so the protesters could do their peaceful thing. That's why. It's a terrible idea. What are you thinking? De Blasio, wake up. What are you doing in that city? You're kind of messing things up a bit. Talk to your governor. He seems to have a much more level head than you do. Sorry, I said it. But anyway, you know, we got a problem here. So they started pushing people back. They held up their batons. They held them out, and they pushed out in front of them. And then, oh, God. And then a white shirt basically came in and rushed towards this person and grabbed their bike and tossed it behind the line of police. This is terrible. This is terrible. How can you confiscate that bicycle without some sort of warrant? I don't know. What do you need? What do you need to confiscate a bicycle? Anybody out there, a cop, wants to talk to me about this? The folks in New York City aren't doing you a lot of good. Let me tell you that. That's really, really shameful. And then using the bikes as an actual weapon, I can't wrap my brain around that. That's just a terrible idea. Anyway, so yeah, it's not your bike anymore. New York has decided to take people's bikes away so they can't use them at the peaceful protests. Great. Wonderful stuff. But yet there's more. There's way more going on here. We're going to put this page away and we're going to come up here. And now we are going to move on to, okay, we got that one. Fuji Bicycles. Fuji's distributor suspends sales. This was published June 5th, by the way. Fuji distributor suspends sales of police bicycles in North America, begins dialogue with police departments. Bike Co., the North American distributor of Fuji bikes, has suspended sales of bikes to police forces, citing recent reports of police bikes being used as weapons at protest marches. A representative from the company said it has begun discussions with police departments and with the International Police Mountain Bike Association, which provides bike training for police officers. The representative said that IPMBA confirmed that they do not advocate using bikes as weapons and does not train officers to do so. And I know this. I've talked to bike cops. Bike cops are, they're like the best. I'll tell you why. When they get out from behind the darkened windows of those Crown Vics or whatever they're using these days for police vehicles, now it's SUVs and they're even scarier looking. They're different. They're humanized. They admit it. They say it makes a huge difference to their presence in the community. So the way that the training has been done with the International Police Mountain Bike Association has been really towards peaceful means, and it's a good thing. It's done a lot for the communities. Communities are now more connected with their police departments that are on bicycles. Bicycles and police make sense. It makes a lot more sense than hiding behind the darkened windshield of a cruiser. It just makes so much more sense, especially in an urban atmosphere like that, where you can have enough of them to get around and you can support community better. When I addressed bicycle cops a few years ago at a bike shop, they said that their arrest and collars were up from 30% to 60% when they started using bicycles, because if someone was really doing something wrong and bad, they could catch them. Whereas in the car, all you had to do is run down a little narrow alley and you're gone. They're not going to get you, because they may radio to let you know that they let their other police officers know, hey, they just went down the alley. They're coming out on XYZ Street. But by the time it happens, the perpetrator is gone. So therefore, you have people getting away with things. Whereas on the bicycle can follow them, chase them down. It can go faster than they can running, and therefore you have an actual useful tool as far as that goes. Right. The problem, and Mike from Eastford says here, the problem is that policing is the policing, not the bikes. That's exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. It's how it's being taught. But if you are taught from the International Police Mountain Bike Association, which I've known these folks from way back when, because I actually spent 10 years working for Fuji Bicycles, and Fuji Bicycles were one of the first bikes in New York City, to the first companies in New York City to put bicycles underneath police for police use. So anyway, and my friend Kevin Moran, if he is still around, hello Kevin, if you're still around, I don't know. If anybody knows if Kevin Moran is still around in the New York City area, I would love to hear from you, because I have lost touch with him. But anyway, he started that whole thing, and he was actually teaching them how to ride, you know, like how to ride your mountain bike downstairs. A lot of people don't know how to do that. So it's, but it's an effective piece of training, and so he was doing that, and he was teaching them how to, you know, use their bikes in other various ways that are generally peaceful. So anyway, that was way back in the early days. That was way, way back in the early days. But so the statement from Bike Co. says, we are committed to bicycles, to police using bikes as part of community policing. We believe policing by bicycle is the best way of policing because the officer is closer to the community. It's something we have advocated for. We have great relationships with police departments, and our dealers also have those relationships. We just feel the situation creates an opportunity for dialogue that we welcome. Fuji bikes are also sold through bike shops. The representative said, Bike Co's dealers who have been in contact support the decision to start a dialogue. Bike Co is headquartered in Northeast Philadelphia. It's a delicate situation. We have dealers whose shops were looted. We also have employees who are former police officers or who have family members that are police officers. We're just saying, let's stop and talk, the representative told Brain. So anyway, Fuji, you get a big tip of the cycling cap on that one. That's you guys are you're handling this correctly. Yeah, you have an interest to protect. Yeah, you still want to be able to supply bikes to police departments. But the fact is, you also don't want your bicycle to be considered a weapon of destruction. So therefore, you know, I don't know how you can control it. If they've purchased it, what is the situation there? Are they liable to follow your recommendations, or are they the police and they can do whatever they want? I say we need to educate our police departments a little better. That's what I would say. It seems to make a lot more sense. Fuji feels the same way, and they're having that conversation. I expect, because John Burke has been very outspoken about equality in America, that the statement that he is going to release today is going to be in the same direction as what the statement is from Bike Co. So that would be my guess, is that he's going to do the right thing, which is good. And he should. He should definitely do the right thing. So, but you know, there's an awful lot of people that are urging Trek to divest from police business after bicycles are used in Black Lives Matter protesters. I don't think they have to divest from doing police business. I think they need to have that discussion with the police departments as to what the bicycles are actually used for. There's another issue too. They do the same thing. There are a number of matters online that I have read, which, you know, you can't believe everything you read, but I have seen that police are actually using their cars to do the same thing, and they're running into people to do that, which is also not a really wise way to police. But I'm not a policeman, I am just an observer, and I ride bicycles, and I'm more concerned about the people who are riding bicycles. I am over the top with the folks out in Seattle who have come to the front lines and barriered out the police so the protesters can do their thing. This is the right way to do it. I know I'm getting really political today. It's something that needs to be discussed. We're all in the middle of this and it needs to be discussed. By the way, shout out to my friends who rode their bicycles into Hartford this past weekend.
It was in East Hartford.
Rode into East Hartford to the Founders Bridge, right, is mm-hmm. where it was?
Yes.
And protested the Black Lives Matter movement. So big shout out to them for doing that. That was a very, very good thing. I hope everyone was safe. There were an awful lot of people there, and I worry about that sort of thing. I'm not willing to expose myself to a crowd of that size at this time. But if others are and they feel comfortable with it, that's great. I'm still not completely out of this thing yet, as far as I feel anyway. So there was, there's a lot of publication of photographs and videos of bike cops using Trek branded bicycles to threaten and hit protesters in the Black Lives Matter marches. So there's a call out there for Trek to get out of the police bike business. I don't think, again, that it's necessary. I think that there needs to be a better education process going on here. And Fran, you said something about the police department in Minneapolis, right? And they had some sort of a change. They're going to disband the police department in Minneapolis. So how are they going to police the streets if they're not going to have a police department? I mean, you have to have something. It's like I said the other day when we were out riding our bikes. If you took the traffic lights away, people would just run into one another, because there needs to be a certain level of control in order to keep people in line, because people just generally don't think clearly sometimes, and that's a problem. And of course we see it very closely because ride bicycles, but
there's going to be community-led public safety.
Okay.
Yeah.
Community-led public safety. Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting idea. I don't know if it's the best idea, but it's an interesting idea.
It's a new system of community-led public safety. That's what it says.
Yeah, I see we have another comment here, too. It's unfortunate that situations involving nuance get polarized. Education can only address so much. It is unfortunate. It's all unfortunate. So I found this article from The Guardian, and it's a very, very simple question. Why bicycles... Or the statement, why bicycles are a must-have for modern civil disobedience. What is it that makes the bicycle and the demonstration such good companions? And, it's a simple way to get into a crowded situation without getting caught in traffic. So a bicycle works well for that. It's, again, peaceful. You are humanized when you get on the bicycle. You're no longer someone behind some sort of a gigantic machine that has the potential of hurting a lot of people. It humanizes the whole thing. It's a person on a bike. It's not a bicycle. It's a person on a bike. So anyway, when the location of this year's climate camp protest was finally revealed on Wednesday, this was back in August of 2009. This is a long time ago. The first activists to arrive were a select group of rented vans tasking with setting up tripods, fencing off sections of the land, and this was southeast of London. But shortly afterwards, the first influx of protesters taking part in the swoop on the site from a series of meeting points around the capital was a contingent of about 150 people, all riding bicycles. They, with me in tow, had spent about 90 minutes pedaling en masse around central London, awaiting the word on where the camp would be. So bicycles are just, it's an easy way to get to places in big cities. It's a very safe ride way of getting around. There's all sorts of interesting protests to bring attention to things like naked bike rides, and it just... Everybody gets together.
Yay, Portland.
They take their clothes off. Oh, Portland, New York, Seattle, San Francisco.
Well, Portland has the naked bike rides.
They all have them now.
Oh, they
They're
do?
All over the world. Yeah, there is actually a world movement of naked bike rides. You can look that up.
And, do we want to do
and
this?
You can see this. I would participate in it. I wouldn't have a problem with it.
No.
I really wouldn't. If you have a problem with it, you don't have to participate in it. Just because I do doesn't mean you do.
Where are you going to participate in the
Naked Bike Ride? It would have to be in some place that is big enough that it would be able to support that sort of thing.
Well, you could do it in Portland. They wouldn't bother you.
I could see it in Hartford at the state capitol. I could certainly see it at the state capitol. But anyway, or I could see it in Boston. I think Boston already has one. I'm pretty sure they do. You could look that up, too, if you wanted to. But anyway, bicycles are an important part of modern civil disobedience. It's what we're going to see. So, bicycle politics. Where do we go from? I'm going to go to this other little story here first before I jump on. And this is the retailers dealing with looting in an aftermath of George Floyd protests. Looters are looters. Looters are problematic. If you're Jay Wolf, who owns 5 shops in greater LA, he lost about 40% of his overall inventory over the weekend from the L. Martin Bicycles location on Beverly Boulevard. Most of the stores were hit around, Wolf said. There wasn't a store that wasn't really touched, and the graffiti, it's horrible. It looks like a war zone. Martin suffered north of $130,000 in inventory loss, including several e-mountain bikes ranging in price from $10,000 to $12,000. Obviously, inventory was a little low because we've been partially open because of COVID and staffing, he said. They were taking anything we could get our hands on. He said that there were thousands of protesters along a stretch of Beverly Boulevard. The store had rolled down gates, but some don't go all the way down, and they were vulnerable to entry. Said one of the front doors was broken down before he and others boarded it up, and he left for Helen's Cycles in Santa Monica, California location. We were watching the protesters go by, and then an hour or two after dark, I guess, they went right after dusk because I'm getting multiple alarm notifications. So we left Santa Monica to go protect it. We jumped out of the car and people were taking stuff out. We stopped the bleeding and then the cops arrived. It was crazy. Here's a problem. And I had this discussion with a bicycle retailer last week after last week's show, and he was really, really concerned. His shop sits in the middle of two major urban centers, one being New Haven, one being Bridgeport, and they were marching to the suburbs. And he was very, very concerned that there would be a problem at his store and didn't know what to do. And I get that. I mean, he's flat out busy. He's having, all these bike shops are having phenomenal years. The bicycle is now a huge commodity, so it's certainly something to be looted because of that. And, it's just a shame that it could be targeted that way or completely looked over as just another, retailer who's making lots of money off the masses, which, trust me, I was in the bicycle industry for 44 years. They are not making lots of money off the masses because it's not that kind of business. So, this is a concern, retailers dealing with looting after the aftermath of the protests. If you're a retailer out there and you're catching this podcast and listening, I'd like to hear from you and hear what you have to say about, how you're handling this. Yet another hard curveball thrown at you this year in 2020. It's just been quite a year, hasn't it? Business is up, business is great, and now you got to worry about losing your business to a riot in the streets. Scary stuff. I'm not opposed to the organized demonstrations. I am opposed to the looting and rioting. That's like stupid. It gets nothing done that's sensible. So sensible, you ride your bike. Sensible, you bring your bike to the protest and you barrier it out so that everybody's protected. That's sensible. That's a good thing. So I just wanted to bring that up because it is in the news. And then I found it's a site that's called We Love Cycling. And that is a .com. And it talks about bicycle politics throughout the history. And the bicycle has been politicized almost since its invention, especially after and because it was mass-produced and became an affordable means of transportation for nearly everyone. If today The bicycle has become the symbol of green transportation and healthy lifestyle, both of which are political. Two and sometimes three-wheelers, they have a rich political history that books have been written on the subject, and there's a few examples here. In the late 19th century, the bicycle became the symbol of feminism for white middle-class and upper-class women, whose duty was, they were repeatedly told, to stay home and cook, clean, and care for their husbands and children. The bicycle, however, enabled them to get out of the house to exercise and see other people. This terrified their husbands, and of course, as it did, the entire patriarchy, because they saw it as a means for women to lose their sexual innocence. What?
Yeah.
You've got to be kidding me.
We're very innocent.
Oh, far from it. Not one I've met. I don't know about you guys or girls out there, but no, I don't think so. Riding in a saddle was widely regarded by men as too masculine for decent women, and numerous doctors wrote articles in medical journals warning about how the bicycle could be used by women for masturbation. You got to be kidding me. Well, we're talking early 19th century. So what do you want? Or early 20th century. Anyway, it goes on down, talks a little bit more about that, and gets very specific about why. And anyway, that's more of what's going on. For real? Yeah, I'll forward you over the article and you can read it and you can have a really good time with it. You might even want to bring it up on Radio Naturopath, because there's probably some things you could talk about here. Women were not the only social class to see bicycle as liberating. Workers too poor to afford cars could now get on a bike and cycle around town. This worsened already strained class relations in Britain, where the bicycle had been a status symbol for the wealthy in the early days before mass production, when it was a rare and expensive commodity. To maintain the illusion of class superiority, a group of elites in England started riding tricycles to distinguish themselves from the common laborers who favored the two-wheelers. Tricycles were supposedly more dignified because they were more expensive. Associations of tricyclists were founded by the wealthy and the professionals, and they excluded anyone not wealthy or professional. Oh, I want to get a tricycle, friend. Yay. The Tricycle Union, which was formed by wealthy members of London society in 1882, put pressure on city governments to exclude bicycles from parks, declaring it was desired by most tricyclists to separate themselves entirely from the bicyclists, who are a disgrace to the pastime.
What?
While tricycling includes princesses, princes, dukes, earls, etc., it's plain that tricycles altogether a better class than bicycles.
Oh, boy.
Give me a break. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, yeah, I'm just mentioning how bicycles have, you know, been in politics for a long time. It's sad but true. And I could go on and on. There's lots. In India, their symbols have always been an essential part of politics. The bicycle has significant brand value, especially for the... Ooh, you're gonna have to say that one for me, Fran. I don't know how to pronounce that. Right there, the highlighted there.
I'm going to go with
Samajwadi Party.
Yeah.
Okay. It has its voter base in the rural and agrarian state of Uttar Pradesh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where bikes are the most popular means of transportation. So, anyway,
have a Strava buddy in India.
Right. Well, it's an important political symbol,
yeah.
Over in India. So there's a lot of things that are happening in parts of, you know, all through history, and how the bicycles have been part of politics. I want to bring up one other thing, which is important to me locally, because I still have a little bit of time. There is an organization in Boston called Bikes Not Bombs. They're in Jamaica Plains. I used to call on them when I was working for Bianchi Bicycles. If you guys are listening, a shout out to you. I love what you do. It's really cool. It's a nonprofit that uses bicycle as a vehicle for social change by recycling donated bicycles, training young people to fix their own bikes, and becoming employable mechanics, and selling thousands of bicycles to international partner communities in countries such as Uganda, Ghana, St. Kitts and Nevis. Nevis, El Salvador, Sierra Leone, Guatemala, Kenya, and Rwanda. And it was founded in 1984 by Carl Kurz, a bicycle mechanic, and Michael Replogel, a Maryland-based transportation partner. So it's cool. If you ever get a chance to go there, you should go there. They're really nice. Everybody is so cool. You can go to their website, which is bikesnotbombs.org. Just politically active, doing the right thing. Big shout out to our friends here in Hartford at BCCO, our friends over in New Haven at Bike New Haven. New Britain at Bike New Britain. And I know there's one in New Haven and I can't think of it right now. But anyway, shout outs for all of you that are doing a similar, they're following a similar path as far as this goes. It's a really, really good thing. This is how we bring people together. And it's a wonderful thing. So I just had to shout out Bikes Not Bombs because they are truly political and they needed to be mentioned. Moving to a little bit more, a little later in here. Yeah, we're close. So, House draft transportation bill contains $6.3 billion for biking and walking infrastructure. The League of American Bicycles applauds the bill's safety and accessibility measure. I'm going to save this one for next week because there's a little bit more to talk about here than I have time for right now. But here we go. Bicycles are making it into big house bills now. This is really important. This is what I've been talking about for the last three and a half years. I don't know how long I've been on. I've been on for a long time. But, you know, we have to take action. We have to move forward with this. Bicycles are an important part of rebuilding our society and our infrastructure. And without them, I can't see it happening by developing the car community. Sorry. It just doesn't seem to work. But bicycles, they just make so much more sense. Being able to walk somewhere safely makes so much more sense. It's just, this is where our country really needs to go. This is our direction right now. And it's being handed to us. So I think it's great. I mean, I'm seeing so much more activity. I think it's wonderful. I just think it is wonderful. More and more talk about the bike paths in Connecticut right here where we are. It's all just a lovely, lovely thing. So anyway, that brings me to finding out where I hid my last page here. It brings me to our events, and the steeplechase is, the registration is open for the steeplechase. It is still on for August 15th. There's a COVID-19 notice that, you know, we're still watching carefully, and it will proceed as scheduled as planned on August 15th, but the final decision will be made no later than August 1st. So we're still there. There are still three very important nonprofits that could really use your help. Even if you don't think you're going to show up, they could still use your help. So please check out the steeplechase, biketour.org, and see what you can do there, if at all possible. So that's my show for today. Like I said, I didn't mention the Thread City Cyclers Century has been canceled. That is not going to happen this year. It looks like it's over. So the plug was pulled last week at a board meeting, and or at least the announcement was made at the board meeting. So we will not have that this year. If you are still looking for those routes to ride, I'm sure that they could be shared if you contact someone from the Thread City Cyclers or even myself. And we can send you off on your own ride if you would like. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, the management, or the licensee of this station. My name is Peddlin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or on podcast, and you'd like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, and now on Spotify. If you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, you can email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, Keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.